श्रीमती रारानी आविर्भाव की श्रीमती रारानी कृष्ण वल्लभी वृंदावन रानी की आविर्भाव महोत्सव रारानी की। सो थैंक यू वेरी मच फॉर इनवाइटिंग मी टू योर लवली टेंपल। Not easy to find, but we made it exactly on time. Radha's mercy. Today is where we are celebrating Radharani's appearance day. Radha, Sri Radha. And I want to talk about a few things, but I certainly want to talk about Sri Radha. Today is Sri Bhaktivinod Thakur Mahashay Avirbhav Ki Jai. Bhaktivinod Thakur's appearance day. Both of them wonderful, wonderful personalities. I was going to say there a moment, but they're on very different levels, but I don't know. Maybe they're not. I don't know. Bhaktivinod, if you've read any of Bhaktivinod's books, or his commentaries. Bhaktivinod is our spiritual master, is Srila Prabhupada, who founded the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. His spiritual master was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. His spiritual master was his father, Sri Bhaktivinod Thakur. That's whose appearance day it is today. He was the author of, I don't know how many books, 60, 70, 80, in Bengali, English, Hindi, Sanskrit. I might be missing a couple languages, but brilliant, brilliant soul. And I've taken great inspiration. One of our godbrothers, Guru Das, who spent a lot of time with Prabhupada back in the early days of the Krishna consciousness movement in America, in London, and in Vrindavan. In fact, Guru Das was kind of in charge of building the Krishna Balaram Mandir, the temple in Vrindavan. Maybe, perhaps some of you have been there. Very, very, very beautiful temple. One day Prabhupada said to Guru Das, he said, "Guru Das, which of my books do you like best?" And how many books has Prabhupada produced? I used to work in the Sanskrit department in Los Angeles. In fact, I was the head of the Sanskrit department. I was there from 75, 76, 77, and Prabhupada left the planet. He left, and my job ran out because he wasn't translating anymore. So it was very practical. Yeah. So they laid me off very soon, within a few months. Anyway, so he says, "Guru Das, which of my books is your favorite?" He says, "Well, Prabhupada, I don't want to offend you." "No, no, no, you won't offend me. Please, tell me which of my books you prefer." "Well, Prabhupada, I really like Bhaktivinod's books." Prabhupada, "Me too." "Me too. I really like them too. I love Prabhupada's books, but Bhaktivinod is, well, it's different authors, different approach. You should read all of Prabhupada's books several times. I have. And you should read all of Bhaktivinod's books. Believe me, I can only recommend it. So my friend Alakananda, whom I haven't met, here he appears. Coincidentally, serendipitously, Hari Bol Prabhu, it is through his intercession that I've come here today. So I hope to do him justice. I'm talking about Love Makes the World Go Round. I thought that might be an interesting title. The spiritual world. Love makes the world go round. The spiritual world. I added that little note. So it's a very common expression. Love makes the world go round. We say it, we've heard it, we've seen it. I mean, you know, since we were children. No? Probably in many cultures, many languages. Is it true? Love makes the world go round. Material world, down here. Is it true?
No.
Más o menos, como si, como sa. Maybe yes, maybe no. Let's take a look. So if we look at a newspaper, we might get the odd story of somebody rescuing somebody from a fire, or a lost dog being found, or some aid workers going over to a far-off country and helping people who are diseased with such things as Ebola virus. Those are nice stories. Some of those are expressions of love, no? But mostly, what do we find in newspapers, news programs, websites? Plenty of bad news. Bad news and plenty of it. That seems to be what they focus on, isn't it? It's our top story. Boy finds dog. I don't think so. So you say, well, hang on a minute. You're rushing to judgment. Okay? I'm listening. You say, what about the people who fall in love and become lovers and, you know, they enter into a marital union together? So I say, do you mean the ones who get married, remain married, and stay loving throughout their lives? Or do you mean the other ones? Which ones are those? Well, for example, one-time loving couples load their divorce weapons with ammunition. Verbal threats, endless legal maneuvers, and all-out character assassination performed in public courts of law. Child custody is commonly used as a bargaining chip in a threat of recrimination. Is it not? People who took vows of love and commitment resort to perjury, fabrication, and manipulation inside and outside of court. Is this not common? Common in the Western world. So this has become commonplace. Was that the intention of the participants in the marriage to begin with? Was that their intention? No, they were doing love makes the world go round, weren't they? So I'm not criticizing them, but that's what they were trying to do. So that wasn't their intention. As we gain various freedoms in our society, we seem to be abandoning various responsibilities, our tradition of courtship and marriage in the Western world no longer seems to work for more than half the people. Fair statement, I think. More and more relationships disintegrate. This causes the collapse of the family unit. This, in turn, causes the ultimate unraveling of the fabric of society. And the degeneration of the institution of marriage has a domino effect in our world. You don't believe me? Go buy the newspaper. Keep your eyes open. Okay. So what do we learn from this? That love makes the world go around in the material world? I don't think so. Sorry. Am I a pessimist? I'm not. I'm an optimist. But I'm a realist. In fact, more importantly, I'm a transcendentalist. Or trying to be. So, what's the opposite of love? Hate can be, but that's not the one I'm looking for. Love? No, that one's good too.
Fear.
Fear. That's the one I'm looking for. Opposite of love is fear. Right? Even this example of divorce court, a lot of fear there, no? Woman's afraid. The man's afraid. For various reasons, the children are really afraid. You seen the effects on you children when this divorce happens? I have. Up close. Sad. Sometimes tragic. So it's fear and retribution that apparently makes this world go round. Now, in the Western tradition, in religion, Christianity, largely, Judaism, I suppose, Islam, for sure, it's not a Western religion, but Islam, definitely. Do they teach us to fear God or love God?
Fear.
What is the focus?
Fear.
Fear. Here, we don't do religion. Hope you guys don't want me to join your religion. It's okay. You're all right. We don't have one. What do you mean you don't have a religion? We don't do religion here. We're not interested in religion. Oh, you're against religion? No. We don't do religion. We like yoga. It's better. Yoga. What the heck is yoga? Linking with God. Soul with God. We do yoga. Well, you do all those postures and all those exercises, asanas. Not exactly. That is a form of yoga. No. Here we do bhakti. Bhakti. Love and devotion. Why? Why do we want love and devotion? Why do we do bhakti? Because love makes the world go round. That's why we do it. So we can become more loving. And we can spin in harmony with the world instead of in a contrary direction. That's we do bhakti. So our aim here is to develop love and devotion to God. Very straightforward. Very simple, not complex, not rocket science, easy enough. As your love and devotion to God increases and becomes stronger, it automatically does what? Reduces your, what's the opposite of love?
Fear.
Really? It doesn't? Don't take my word for it. Test it out. If you develop your, if this is your love and this is your fear, let's just say your fear is a little bit more than your love. I'm not saying you're not loving, but we're in a pretty scary place here, this world, you know. We're up here in Belfast. I mean, we had the troubles here. We had all kinds of stuff going on here. I mean, you guys know it better than I do. You know, I've only visited a few times. There are some very dangerous places and scary things in this world, unquestionably. So our fear may be here. So how do we overcome our fear? Well, no problem. Xanax, Prozac. It's easy enough. Go see the doctor. Throw a few things at you there. Take 4 of these a day for the next year and call me.
If you can.
If you can pick up the phone and organize the numbers, call me up. Thanks, doctor. Right? Fix you up in no time. Oh, those pills didn't work for you? Okay, get off those. The little red ones? They're green. Oh, okay. She's still suffering from the Prozac. So, it reduces your fear. Love reduces fear. Automatically. The closer you get to God, the further you get from fear. I guarantee it. You can't guarantee. I can guarantee it. I can't guarantee that you're going to get closer to God if you don't do the work and you don't practice and you don't do your meditation and your japa and your mantra and your prayers and get down on your knees. No, I can't guarantee. But I can if you do. Your fear will. Proportionately disappear or be reduced. Okay? Is it true? So let's take an example here in the good old material world that we all took a wrong turn someplace in the country. This doesn't look like paradise. Mm-hmm. Where's the Garden of Eden? Oh, they kicked you out, my friend. We're here now, so let's make the best of it. So, supposing there's a gentleman and he loves to swim. And the guy can swim for miles. And he water skis. And he surfs in the ocean. And he scuba dives at the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. He may as well be a fish, but he's a man. So he takes his little daughter to the swimming pool. For the first time, age 3, 4, 5, I don't know. She knows you can drown in the swimming pool. So he said, this is the deep end. Don't go in there. It's over your head. If you can't swim. Come to this side. This is the shallow end. They have little steps going down. Is that over my head, Dad? No. It's not over your head. I'm coming with you anyway. Slowly, a little bit at a time, he teaches her about the water, how much fun it is to be in the water. Teaches her how to float, teaches her how to swim, teaches her many things, until she becomes very familiar. So what happens to her fear about concerning the water? Does it not disappear? Over time, because she gets closer and closer to the master of the water. In this case, her dad, who can swim 60 ways from Sunday and can surf the big waves in Hawaii. So under his tutelage, she becomes an expert swimmer. Her fear of the water has disappeared. Yeah, she has to learn how to handle some of the big waves, but you see, this is how it works. It's gradual. You get closer to Krishna, these fears, they go, run away. What's Krishna afraid of? Tell me. Give me the list. Tell me all the things Krishna's afraid of. When you read Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna was shaking in his boots on the battlefield opposing this guy or that guy.
Mother Yashoda.
Mother Yashoda, yeah, okay. No argument there. You got me there. Mother Yashoda chased him with a rope, tied him to the mortar. That is more of the rasa than the fear. So what's the greatest fear in this world, my friends? A lot of people are afraid of death. Big surprise? No. Do you blame them? No. Scary business. Death's an option. Oh yeah, we all material bodies. Death will come. But if you understand you're a soul, and you become the soul you are, you raise your consciousness to a transcendent platform through love and devotion to God, death's no big deal. It's a transition. It's like getting out of the car and into the rain for a few minutes and then getting into the warm house. It's about that complicated. Oh, no, it's far more complicated. No. Well, maybe if you're a big demon or a murderer or an axe murderer or something. Yeah, maybe. It's a little more complicated. When the Yamadutas come to get you, sure. The messengers from the Lord of Death yama. But not for most people. Not so difficult. Once in the Mahabharata, Yamaraj, the Lord of Death. Now, when you say the Lord of Death, don't think of him as this ugly, fierce, dark character. He's actually a god. He's a celestial being. He's very beautiful. He's very compassionate. He's extremely intelligent. He's also called Dharmaraj, because he's the in charge of Dharma, duty. Do your Dharma, do your duty, do your obligation, do right by people, do right by yourself, do right by others. What do we call that? Win, win. Good for you, good for me, good for Mother Earth. Oh, I almost forgot her. No, don't forget her. Good for me, good for you, good for Mother Earth. It's good for me, good for you, and bad for Mother Earth. Is it good? Is it Dharma? I'm afraid not, my friends. Anybody who thinks it is selling you the Brooklyn Bridge in New York, which of course is not for sale. Yeah? So, Yamaraj appeared. Disguised. Do you remember the form he was disguised as? I think a yaksha. You're right. That's right. Yeah.
Either a rakshas or a
yaksha. And he wanted to ask them riddles, and they couldn't answer them, so they all dropped. He's the Lord of Death, so he put them all to death. Well, temporarily. And then Yudhishthira put them. Yudhishthira is actually the king. Was the king, the rightful king, and one of the five Pandavas. And he said to Yudhishthira, Yudhishthira was very upset. What have you done? You've killed all my brothers, all four of them. Is this no problem? We can bring your brothers back to life. Relax. You just have to answer a riddle, or two, or five, or however many you have. Now, Yudhishthira didn't know that that was his father, that was Yamaraj, and he was actually his father. He's born from a queen and a god. His mother was a queen, his father was a god. He didn't know that. The only question I'm going to mention is, Yamaraj said, what is the most amazing thing that you've seen in the material world in all your years here? Yudhishthira said, the most amazing thing here in the material world is that everybody dies. But no one else who sees everybody die thinks it will happen to them. They think their day will never come. That's the most amazing thing. And Yamaraj says, yes, that is it. Yudhishthira went on to answer all his questions correctly. Like father. Mm-hmm. Like son. Here in Krishna consciousness, we focus on Radha and Krishna. There's two paintings here. There's Radha and Krishna on the second painting here. I think that's Radha and Krishna. Is it? I can't quite see with the sun coming, with the light coming through. Do we see Radha and Krishna in this one? Also? I see Krishna there. Yeah, he's got Krishna Balaram. Aren't the gopis on his right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she can't be far behind. So, in Christianity, they talk a lot about love and forgiveness. Jesus Christ talked a lot about love and forgiveness, didn't he? I think so. In the New Testament of the Bible, but that's not the predominating theme that we find in Christian religions, is it? Is it the predominating theme? No. Why? Because the Old Testament of the Bible still resonates more powerfully, it appears. In our indoctrination into Christian dogma since childhood. And what kind of God is that? Well, that is an angry, vengeful personality. He is usually discussed as the god of hellfire, brimstone, punishment, and retribution. Might God have that aspect? He may. Is that the only aspect he would have? Why do you limit him so? God is unlimited. We are limited. Whatever you can think of, he can think of 10,000 things beyond that in the one subject, by the way. He's not limited. Every emotion, every sentiment, every outlook, every view, every rasa, every taste, every flavor, every relationship, every dynamic here in the material world comes from God. Otherwise, it wouldn't be here. Oh, I see humans made up a few things that I never thought of. I doubt it. I don't think so. So, what they say in the Christian religion is God will smite you down. He will smite you. I'm not real attracted to that kind of a God. Myself. You want to meet him? No, I don't really want to meet him. I don't like people like that either. No offense. They want to smite me down and strike me and call me names and criticize me unfairly and whatever. Maybe it's just me. I don't like it. Well, what do you like, Drew? I like love. I like kindness. I like compassion. I like sympathy, empathy, understanding, nurturing, friendship. And I like to look at somebody in the eyes and see that they see what I see because I can feel it. That's what I like the most. Why do we pick Krishna? Why does God manifest as Krishna? Why do we meditate on Krishna? Why don't we meditate on Yahweh or Jehovah or Allah or many other forms of God that are out there according to different religions. In the Vedic system, in the Indian system, which dates back thousands and thousands of years, many, many forms of God. Why? For different reasons, for different purposes. We cannot limit God in any way, shape, or form. Whatever step you're at, my friends, he's a few steps ahead. So there are many forms. You say, well, I don't really like this form or this particular manifestation of God. I like a different one. Fine. There's one for you. Don't worry. Right? When you go shopping and you go to the store, to the shops, I don't know, maybe you're shopping for clothing. With your friends, your friend has come along. Here, this is nice. Never wear that in a million years. No, you wouldn't. Why should you? You don't like it. Your friend might like it, but you don't like it. Do you buy things you don't like and wear them? I hope not. I hope you buy what you like and wear. Then you'll feel better. You'll feel best. Right? Same with God. Let's find a manifestation of God that touches us most deeply. Krishna means all attractive. The most attractive personality. Krishna means to draw, to attract, to pull, to magnetize. Krish. In Sanskrit. As Krishna, he's on about his business and he's doing serious things like smiting people down with thunderbolts and not really. He didn't really care about that. What do you like to do? Well, I like to sing. Do you like to sing? Play that radio, travel along, sing to the latest songs, put on your kirtan CDs, your iPod, chant Hare Krishna. Do you like to dance? Krishna loves to dance. Singing, dancing? God, it sounds like Ireland, doesn't it? They love to do that stuff. Just must be the next stop before the spiritual world. Because that's what they do here, and they're very good at it. And no matter what happens, no matter how it comes down in this country, they keep doing it anyway. Sing, dance, a little bit of, you know. So it says in the Vedas that in the spiritual world, all talking is what?
Song.
What is it, a Broadway musical? Not exactly. And all movement is dance. Can you imagine? Can you? What that's like. Maybe when your kids were young, my kids are grown now, I would go see them at school because they were doing a performance or, you know. Gonna go see the kids who are doing a big performance. Dad, are you coming? Oh, yeah, no, I'm coming. I wouldn't miss it for the world. There you go, right? And they're dancing and they're singing and they're doing a little choreography. The big smile and maybe a costume. One looks like a watermelon. One looks like an aubergine or, you know, how they do it. And what happens? The kids, they light up. I'm not even talking about Krishna consciousness. I'm just talking about mundane stuff. What to speak of in Krishna consciousness. When they're singing and dancing about God. And all the adults, all the parents in the audience, trying to draw a parallel here. Isn't that the way it is? You don't really care what they're singing. How good the dancing, you don't care. It doesn't matter. Because the joy exudes from everyone. It's just fun. And then she comes over to you. Oh, Dad, I messed up in that one part. Oh, I didn't even see that. Really? Oh, you're wonderful. You think so? Thank you. So, gee. You mean you can go to the spiritual world and sing and dance and play and splash in the Yamuna and the water and the river? Boat. They love to boat under the full moon. Nice boating. Rasa dance. At night they do rasa dance by the full moon. Lay deep in the night. Eat all kinds of wonderful prasadam. Wonderful spiritual food. Play with the animals, take care of the cows and the calves, run through the forest, laugh and giggle, play tricks on the gopis, on the maidens. Gee, that's a rough life to live in. Sounds a bit stress-free to me. I mean, well, that'll never do. We need stress, don't we? Down here we do. Not there. There was a German scholar many years ago who was searching all his life. He is a Sanskrit scholar. He was searching all his life to find God, to find the meaning of life, to find the highest expression of the Godhead. And somebody introduced him to Krishna. And he said, this must be God. He's got nothing to do. He's footloose and fancy free. He just runs around playing in the forest with the coward maidens. Eating, singing, dancing, swimming, splashing, boating. That's got to be God. Why does he need the stress? He doesn't need the stress. Nor do you. We develop our love for God. We develop our love for everyone. Isn't that a side thing? No. It's not. It's all included. All-inclusive trip to the spiritual world. Everything's included. Well, don't even need extra money for it? No. No, you don't. You don't even need money. It's all included. And for how many weeks is that? eternity. It can't be for that long. Your job's over. Your life's over. Your problems are over. Your stress is over. Relax. I don't know if I can relax right away. No, it might take you a couple weeks to just defuse. Fair enough. That's all you got to do. Develop your love. See what happens. Don't take my word for it. Develop it. See what happens. So, if Jesus talked about love and forgiveness, which Jesus did, then if you go into a Christian church, what should you see? What iconography should you, do you expect to see? Well, let me take a wild guess. You expect to see Jesus rising from the dead, the resurrection. Easter Sunday. Ooh, that'd be nice. Ooh, the stone out of the way. There's the angel. Where's Jesus? He's gone. Where is he? He went away. Is he dead? No, he's alive. Resurrection. Resurrection from the dead, or the ascension, when he ascended into heaven. And all the angels around, that beautiful scene they paint. That's what you see when you go into a Christian church, isn't it? No.
It's a cross.
Yeah. You don't see that. You see that. Crucifixion and Jesus on a cross. That makes you feel all warm and fuzzy, doesn't it? Well, this must be a religion of love and forgiveness. Who knew? Yeah. Hang on now. Don't be offensive. Jesus died for our sins. Mm-hmm. And this crown of thorns business and the spear in the side and the feet and the hands nailed. What's that all about now? Because he spoke up, he spoke out, he spoke on behalf of love and forgiveness. You can't do that around here. And if that's what they did to him, what will they do to you? What did you do wrong compared to him? Oh, yeah. See, here's your list. It goes on and on. Thank you. No, thank you. I have nothing against Jesus at all. So let me be clear. Okay. But I want to feel the love. I want to feel that connection. And that's what I get when I look at paintings like that. That's where I want to go. I don't want to go to the bloody battlefield. I don't want to go there. I don't want to go where my Savior is being crucified. Thank you. No, thank you. I want to go run through the forest and splash in the water. I'm a simple guy. What's it say in the Bible? Unless, how does it go? Unless you become like innocent, like the child, you shall not enter into the kingdom of God. Does it not say that? Right? What is that telling us? Oh, we have to recapture our innocence, our childlike innocence, our trust and our vulnerability. Trust and vulnerability. Are you nuts? They pounded that out of me when I'm five. Yeah, they're good at that, aren't they? So, I'm not going to trust anybody. I'm not that stupid anymore. You know, I'm wise. I'm wise to what's going on. You're wise and you're hurt. And you're wounded. And you're traumatized. And there are breaches of trust. And you're carrying those wounds. We don't want to keep carrying them. And let him go. So this is the whole concept, becoming childlike. Well, who is setting the standard for becoming childlike? Oh! Radha and Krishna? Well, how are they setting the standard? Come on. I just told you. Running around, having fun. Footloose, Fancy Free, pretty good. But what is strikingly obvious, or what confirms that in the paintings, in the reality, in the depiction of the deed? What confirms it for us? Krishna and Radha don't appear much older than 14 to 16 years old. Oh, you mean they never grow up? Not exactly. He's going to be way more mature than you are. I don't care how mature you are, if he chooses to be. But he doesn't appear old. He doesn't get old. You know how popular old age is these days in this world with us? We're all looking forward to getting old and our bodies falling apart and becoming decrepit, are we not? No. We take every step possible from Botox to under the knife, HGH, human growth hormone. You can keep track of them all.
You gotta look at me. It's just a comedian.
No, that's because you're Nigerian and you always look youthful. Right? So, wanting to be young and youthful and vital and vibrant, it's completely natural. What else do you want to be? We don't want to be old. I don't. I knew it was coming. It's on its way. But we don't want to be. Inside, I feel like I'm 18. Sometimes my wife suggests I act younger than that. I don't know if she means that in a good way. I don't ask that part. But I don't want to let today go by without really talking about Radha. Because we're celebrating Radha's appearance day. Who is this Radha? Anyway, you know. Krishna's God, okay. Allah is God. Yahweh is God. And Jehovah is God. Different aspects of God. What do they say when they say Allah? They say one thing, one quality. They stress it over and over and over again. Allahu Akbar. What does it mean? God is great. Is it true?
Yes.
Absolutely. Are they off the beam? No. Spot on. Is God great? Absolutely. Greater than we can imagine. Is that his only quality? No. That's one of many, 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 many qualities. Love and any relationship we have that we can construe to be a loving relationship. In case you need me to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that's what you're looking for in the world. From start to finish. From the time you squeeze your little head out of that womb and start crying your little head off until they put you in a box or they put you in the furnace or throw you to the vultures if you live in Tibet. It's only one thing we really want, isn't there? It's love. To be loved, to love. Whom? Everyone. Everything, everyone. Just my loved one? No. Just my wife and kids? Me? No. Do I not want to be loved at work? We don't think loved, but you want to be. You want to be popular. Want them to look at you, like, oh, hey, there's my buddy. Good to see you here. You're 3 minutes late. Yeah, sorry. We want love in every relationship, don't we? Is that very important? It's vitally important. It's vital. More important than anything else. You can give me your list. I'm not going to say anything negative about your list, but it's not going to. Nothing on your list will go above love. So, I want to become a multimillionaire. That's very nice. But you want to be loved more than that. I know multimillionaires. I know several. And you probably do too. Some of them are wonderful people. Some of them are miserable. Does money make you happy? No. It can add to life. But it's not the cause of happiness. It's explained in the Vedas, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Prabhupada has translated. God himself, in his human form, well, when I say human, in his personal form, I should say, Ishvara Paramakrishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karana. Krishna is the Supreme Controller, Supreme Godhead. Ishvara Paramakrishna Sachidananda Vigraha. He has a Vigraha. He has a form. Oh, no, no, I thought he's just energy. He has that. Just like the sunshine is the energy of the sun. Oh, but I thought he was in the hearts of all beings. I thought he's inside every atom, every molecule. Yeah, he's that. He's inside everything. Every person, every animal, every insect. Every amoeba. Blade of grass. Yeah, yeah, he's that. Yeah, well, he can't have a form. He's God. God can't have a form. He's energy. He's formless. He's just energy. Oh, so God can't do what you do. He hasn't got that form thing down yet. Can't do a head and eyes and a couple of feet and a couple of arms. No, no, that's beyond him. He's just energy. Wrong. Okay. Does he have that aspect of just energy? Yeah. He does. Go have a relationship with it. See how it goes for you. It's awesome. But we have relationships with people. Do we not appreciate relationships with people? Other persons? Other vigrahas? Other forms? It's personal, no? What's personal? Everything is personal. Everything. It makes all the difference in the world. This world and that world. Both. It's all personal. So Krishna, the person, the supreme personality of Godhead, says, well, you know, I don't even understand myself what it's like to be with myself. Well, you may have an appreciation for yourself, but you don't know how wonderful you are until you go into relationship with somebody who grows to love you. Correct? And then what do they tell you? They tell you how wonderful you are. They don't. When you do this, and this face that you make when this happens, and you do this for me, and you know, and sometimes you just do things for me, I don't even ask you, and they're done. Oh my God. Heart beats quicker. Or like your children. Oh Dad, I just love you so much. I just love you so much. Why do you love me so much? I don't know. Mm. I just do. Well, Krishna had the same dilemma. Now, I can't say from a subjective point of view, because I'm not in Krishna's mind. I can't even believe or understand how it might take place from that position. But I'm just trying to help you here, okay? He goes, what's it like to be with me? I don't really know. You know, those people pray to me. Mostly they want stuff. You know so too. So, I'm going to manifest my female counterpart. You're what? I'm going to manifest my other half, my better half. Better half. Going to manifest in the form of Sri Radha. Right? Just to see what it's like. Well, we all know, because it's God, and Krishna has consciousness of every being at every moment, every day. You have consciousness of your body, your mind, and everything going on inside of you. Finished. That's where it begins, that's where it ends. He has consciousness of all of you and himself. So when he manifests himself into his consort, his female counterpart of Sri Radha, he gives her what he does for all of us, the blessing of what? Two words. Free
will.
Free will. Does he force you to do stuff? No, he doesn't. And even you could be the biggest rascal on the planet. And we know there are a lot of big rascals on the planet these days, I think. He still doesn't force you to do anything, does he? So would he force Radha? No! He wouldn't. Why? Because that's not love. Is love manipulation? Is love force? Is that an expression of love? You better do what I tell you or else. Oh, gee, you're so loving. I can't believe it. No. No, he doesn't. Yet he has consciousness of Radha. We can't say that he doesn't. His consciousness is of everything else, everyone else. No. But she can be who she is. Oh, Krishna, I love you so much. You're like this and like this and like that, and you do this. Oh, my heart melts when I don't see you. I just yearn to be with you. I just want to be around you. When you're gone, herding the cows and the calves throughout the day, I can't wait till you come home at night. I listen for you to blow your bugle horn and play your beautiful flute. Can you imagine what it's like listening to God play the flute? Can you give me a moment here? What must that be like? Now, if you like flute, I love flute. I listen to Hari Prasad, Chaurasia, and, you know, a lot of the big guys, best flute players. Who's the guy from Ireland? Galway, James Galway. Remember him? That's his name. Virtuoso. Classical flute and Irish songs. Beautiful, beautiful players. If that's what the humans can play like, what must Krishna play on? No idea. So when Krishna plays, the animals, the coward maidens, become stunned. Is that? It's him. It's his flute. It has an effect that I cannot possibly describe. So now we have Radha. Consort. Now, you've been running around the planet for a few years. Correct? What do many of us do as we run around the planet? Around about the age of puberty, or maybe earlier. Gotta find me a girl. Gotta find me a man. Yes, you got to get married and settle down. That's actually really good advice, because if men don't get married and settle down, there's no telling what they get up to. Come on, I'm a man. You think I don't know this stuff? I'm not making this stuff up. Get married and settle down. If you can be a brahmachari, lifelong celibate, excellent. That's this man. It's not this man. Let's be truthful. Right? So now he has Radha. And just like Krishna wanted Radha, we want relationships in our lives. It's very natural. God doesn't imitate us. We imitate the Godhead. He liked jokes and laughing and fun and good food and partying and dancing. That's because God likes it. That's where it comes from. We are not the source. Krishna's the source. So not to be remiss, I had to give you a little bit of that. But now I'm going to talk about Radha. I had to introduce her first, give you her context. Radha is the highest embodiment of the highest worship of Krishna. She is the pleasure potency personified. Hladini Shakti. Hladini Shakti. Do you wonder where the word Aladdin comes from? Hladini Shakti. Never thought about that one, did you, when you were rubbing your genie lamp, did you? Everything comes from Sanskrit, my friends. Just gotta read a bit. So, I'm gonna just give you a few quotes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Tell you about some of the things it says about Radha. Just so you can absorb the mood of Radha in relation to Krishna. Srimati Radharani is the topmost spiritual gem. Wow. It's quite a statement. What's the most valuable thing? What's the most valuable inanimate thing on earth?
Diamond.
A diamond? A ruby? A sapphire? A gem? She is the topmost spiritual gem. Nothing more valuable, nothing more beautiful, nothing more brilliant. Right? If they put her in auction at Christie's, they wouldn't know what to do.
Priceless.
No one would be able to afford her. Only Krishna. And the other gopis, such as Lalita, Vishakha, and so on, are expansions of her own spiritual body. The gopis are the coward maidens who live in Vrindavan. When you say coward maidens, it was a community where they looked after cows. Dairy cows. Let's be clear. Dairy cows. What, they didn't do any beef farming? No. They didn't do any beef farming. They didn't slaughter innocent animals for profit or for consumption. No, never. That is not the spiritual world. It is not reflective of compassion. All dairy cows. So the cowherd maidens are the daughters of the families of the cowherds. Right? Cowherd is the word. So the gopis, coward maidens, are expansions of her spiritual body. If you have a quality or a thought or an idea or a talent or ability or a desire, you have to undertake its manifestation yourself. You follow me? You have to go and develop your talent. Or you have to go and fulfill your desire, manifest your desire. Right? Or, in other words, you have to make it happen. You follow? Radha, her desires, her qualities, her talents and abilities are manifest in the forms of other women, coward women, in spiritual gopis. You with me now? Sometimes you say, oh, I got so much to do. If only I had a few more hands. Well, what if you, why don't you manifest another 8 manifestations of yourself to look exactly like you or perhaps differently? And let them go do all that. Next statement. Srimati Radharani's transcendental body is brilliant in luster. when a gem's luster is brilliant, when its brilliance is lustrous, it's considered very, very valuable. What is it on the diamond scale? VVS1, is it? And full of all transcendental fragrances. Ooh. And Lord Krishna's affection for her is like a perfumed massage. So, filled full with transcendental fragrances. So what is she wearing? Like Chanel? Number one? Oh no, poison. It must be poison. No. It must be Dior.
Brand.
No. None of those. Those are too mundane. Sandalwood. Musk. Jasmine.
Chuya.
Chuya. C-U-Y-A.
Chuya.
Chuya. As many. It's not one. There's many. Many sisters. There's many. Very many. Parijata, maybe. Boarded from the heavenly planets. Went down. Got it. Bring it back. I don't know. Musk is a big one. Sandalwood is a big one. They don't wear perfumes in the spiritual world. The essence of oils, flower essences, no perfume, no chemicals. Srimati Radharani takes her first bath in the shower of the nectar of compassion. She takes her midday bath in the nectar of youth. And after her midday bath, she takes yet another bath later in the day in the nectar of bodily luster. Now, let me ask you something. When you bathe in your bath, well, since this is a lady, I'll direct it towards ladies. Radha's very much a lady. When you get into your bath and relax, maybe you put some nice oils, perfumed oils, or you light the candles, you know, it's quite nice. Relax. So, do you imagine that it is in the, that you are taking a bath in the nectar of compassion? How many? Show of hands. How many of you ladies bathed today in the nectar of compassion or yesterday? Zero. Okay, no, there's our first mistake. We can do that. How would you do that? Aren't you creative beings? Isn't the mind a creative thing? Oh, yeah. That's how you do it. You imagine it. And you bathe in compassion. Well, why would you want to be compassionate? Because it's part of love. That's why. Right? My God, did you just say she has three baths a day? What is the woman doing? Don't we have a very common expression down here? Cleanliness is?
Godliness.
Next to godliness. Where did that come from? Somebody just pull that out of their head? No. Cleanliness next to godliness. Well, yeah, now he's telling me I got to go home and bathe three times a day. I'm not telling you that. If you wish to do that, you may. Do not take our bath each time. Okay. We're conserving water here. Then she takes another bath in the nectar of youth. Oh! So this is how we get around the Botox thing. We take a bath in the nectar of youth. Well, let's give that a whirl, shall we? Don't tell me you did it 2 days in a row and it didn't work. Okay, I don't want to hear that. Don't send me any emails like that. Meditation is meditation, right? These are meditations. Now, this is a description of Radha. Would you think you can't adapt this for your own self? I hope you do. These are meditations. Okay? And meditation means over one period of time, every day. We are asked to chant 16 rounds a day of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra on our Japa Mala. 16, oh my God, that's over 2 hours. Prabhupada's guru told him to chant 64 rounds a day. That's over 8 hours it takes. Prabhupada said, these people from the West, they're not going to be able to do that. I'm going to reduce to 2 hours a day. And can they do that? Even though it's kind of, it's a lot. I'm just telling you the truth. And then she takes a bath in the nectar of bodily luster and puts on the garment of shyness. Why is that important? We are losing our moral compass in this world. And women who are shy, it's not celebrated like it used to be. Shyness and coyness and that sort of thing, you know, sidelong glance that Radha likes to do. Nowadays, it's all out there. I mean, it's sexting, and all kinds of stuff that's going on, truthfully. And a lot of young lives are actually being ruined in this way. That is a fact. Because they're losing their morality. And they're being made to feel like acting brazen and sexual and before they're, when they're still even young, is the thing to do. Of course, it isn't. Back to Radha. Conjugal love for Krishna is an abundance of musk. Have you smelled musk? Good quality musk? You will not smell it in any of the commercial perfumes. Trust me. And with that musk, her whole body is decorated. Shastra. Musk. The ornaments decorating her body are the blazing ecstasies of goodness. Oh, what are the blazing ecstasies of goodness? What does that refer to? Does it refer to lust? What's the highest expression of love? Is it lust? Oh, I'd really like to. You would too? Okay, good. Let's go. Mutual lust? Is that a high expression of love? No. The highest expression of love is? Surrender. Surrender. I have, in the past 37 years, I've had some 40,000 clients around the world. And I learned one or two things speaking to all these people. And this is the one I hear most commonly in the last 25 of those 37 years. So, you're in a relationship? Yes. This is your fiance? Yes. You're planning marriage? Yeah. I'm speaking to a woman right at this moment. So, have you surrendered to him? What? Have you surrendered to him? Yeah, yeah, we had sex. No. Yeah, I thought you had sex, but no, that's not what I mean. Have you surrendered to him? Given yourself completely? Has he done so for you? Well, okay, hang on now. Pretty much, but I'm holding something back here. I'm just in case, I'm holding a little something back. You know, just in case I've got to replace him with someone else. You know how many times I've heard that? Thousands. Thousands of times. women are more inclined to surrender than men are, in case you need me to tell you. Right? Surrender. Radha is fully surrender. You say, well, wait a second, I'm not surrender and get myself, you know, messed over and misled and cheated on and, you know. Yeah, that happens too. Can't trust. Radha. The tilak of good fortune is on her beautiful broad forehead. Tilak of good fortune. The mark of Vishnu. We do that nowadays. A little different. We get tattoos, piercings, get some Chinese letters. We don't know what the heck they mean. They said it means this. I don't think so. I know a little Mandarin and it don't mean that. Well, that's what they told me. Tattoos, piercings. That's the modern day tilak. Is it the mark of good fortune? Maybe. Radharani's gopi friends are her mental activities. She thinks of something, it manifests out around her. Whatever thought, whatever desire, whatever wish she has, the gopis carry it out, either before she has it or immediately upon having it. That's what it's like there in the spiritual world. God, don't you want to be part of that? Prabhupada always taught us to pray to Krishna just to become a speck of dust on his lotus feet, eternally, lifetime after lifetime. Be humble. Pray for this. Krishna will lift you up. Okay, I'm concluding now. I know you're ready to move on and take prasad. Bhakti, devotional service, is the eternal constitutional position of all living beings. To develop love and devotion to God, because it is both the method and the goal. And when you reach the goal, the method doesn't stop. Because mostly when you develop a method or a system of yoga or religion, when you reach the goal, you stop doing that method because the goal has been reached. You put away the GPS. You don't need it anymore. Kalindi and I were ready to throw the GPS out the window just before we arrived at the temple. But we restrained ourselves. Persons are very rare that are devoted to God with their whole souls. Very rare. Can you find them? Yeah. Are they all in Krishna consciousness? No. I found them all over the world from all kinds of backgrounds. No one's got the corner on love and devotion to God. It's just that this process happens to be quite effective. And it has so much more information, like some of which I gave you today. Can you imagine if the whole world was populated by such persons who are full of universal compassion, endued with knowledge of the soul, and are always employed in doing good to others? Then the golden age would set in. In the age of Kali, the iron age we are in now, since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared 500 years ago, it has begun 10,000 years of a golden age within the iron age. That's like a minor Jupiter period and a major Rahu period. For those of you that know Jyotish, all persons would act without any personal desire or need for selfish gain. What? Are you kidding me? Has anybody told the politicians about this? All persons would act without selfish desire, but only for the benefit of everybody. That's what a golden age is, my friends. That's the definition. I don't care what religion you're from. That's the definition. How close are we to that? How close are you to that? You want to get there? That's how you get there. We have to develop an ardent longing to love God. The more time you spend with God in meditation, talking, praying, reading the books, chanting, the closer you become. The closer you become, the more the love develops and the fear begins to dissipate and disappear. And you can't wait to die. This is not a morbid statement. You can't wait to... I'm out of here. I wonder if he's coming. I'm ready. My wife gives me a hard time when I talk like that. But that's how I feel. There's nothing morbid about it. I'm real happy to be here and do my dharma. But the good part's coming. I hope I'm trying to get there. So... does love make the world go round? Oh, yes. This world? Can we improve it? Sure. We can improve it. But not without improving ourselves as individuals. So, we invite you to join us on our little journey to return to the spiritual realm, where unconditional love pervades everything and everyone. Shrimati Radharani Avir Bhav Mohotsav Ki. Thank you. Any questions? You had a question?
Well, I'm a bit embarrassed with the question, but I'll ask you anyway.
Okay.
Well, because it's on my mind all the time.
Okay. As long as we're not both embarrassed by it, we'll be okay.
if we have such a need to be in relationship or to love,
mm-hmm.
So then what happens when we go, like, I then feel that I'm never going to get into the spiritual world because I want to be in a relationship. So does it mean that it's changed for me loving God and not another jiva or ziva or whatever? do you know what I mean? Like, does it stop then?
Well, you have to look at it like this. We have spiritual desires and material desires, but mostly we're conditioned by our material desires, our conditioning, not only since childhood, but for many, many, many lifetimes. Don't forget. If we were not so conditioned, our desire to be in a relationship would not be so strong. Not that there's anything wrong with being in a relationship, particularly if both people are on the same wavelength, and it's a relationship that is... expanding, or its goal is heading toward God consciousness, is not a negative thing. It's not a bad thing at all. There's nothing wrong with that. And that sort of is a bridge to get you over to not, you know, people don't like being alone. They like to be with someone. That's our nature. There's some few of us can be alone, but it's not easy for most of us. We prefer to have someone. And, you don't need to have a relationship to get close to God, but it does not mean a relationship won't help you to get close to God if we're on a spiritual wavelength within that relationship. So we don't have to curse ourselves, oh, well, I'm still interested in being with the opposite sex. Nothing wrong with that. It is a natural thing. But we want to be in relationship or with the opposite sex for the right reason, not for the wrong reason. Does that answer that?
Well, so when you're in the spiritual world, like, does that, you know, the way, like, you know, when we leave our bodies, and but the essence of our soul goes through, but like, that's, I can never get there, but like, what, does that still, inkling still exist? Or you're saying that the material world makes us
If you read enough in the Vedas, in the Shastra, it will tell you that, you know, there are many levels of the spiritual world. What I've been talking about mostly today is the highest transcendental level of Goloka Vrindavan with Krishna and the gopis. But there are many Vaikuntha planet, where different manifestations of Vishnu or God take place. And in those planets, there are many, many married people. Just like, you know, well, even in Goloka Vrindavan, the cowherd men and women, they're all married. They have families. Oh, yeah, yeah. They're husband and wife and families and children. And yeah, I mean, that's there too. But the focal point is Krishna. The focal point is God. It's not the ego or my husband and myself. And that's not the focal point. It's not that you don't love your husband and your children, but down here in the material world, the focal point is the family and the husband and the children and the wife. That's the focal point. In the spiritual world, God is the center. So if you make God the center even here, then you're actually living in or manifesting the spiritual world. So anything that is material in nature, connected to the body and the mind, etc., is all for my sense gratification. It's all what I need and what I want. It's not that you can't have some sense gratification in the material world, but ultimately, everything should be done for the pleasure of God. So you say, well, wait a second. You know, I'm not smoking this cigarette for the pleasure of God. No. But we want to bring ourselves to that point gradually. What, by tomorrow? No, it's not that easy. It takes time. You have to be kind to yourself and give yourself time. But if God is at the center, then it's spiritual. If you're at the center, then it's material. It's pretty simple. If you have one material desire at the time of your death, guess what? You'll be back. You'll be back. I'll give you another body down here. If all your desires are spiritual, connected to the soul, connected to God, you don't come back.
This love transcends gender. Because when you talk about Vrindavan, you said something like male and female, men and women. But, you know, love doesn't love.
Love transcends gender. Love doesn't always have to be in terms of male and female and the enjoyment of the opposite sex. When you love your child, does it transcend gender? It doesn't matter what gender the child is. You're loving that I hope. You're loving the individual, not the gender.
But you're loving the soul.
You're loving the soul. You're loving the soul. Exactly. So transcendental love or pure love or true love transcends everything, not just gender. Ultimately.
I just want to clear that.
Yeah. Are we good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Arranged.